Wouldn't you love to get paid for doing what you love to do? If you're ready to move on to what's next, join us for Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson. Our uplifting live talk show on Saturday mornings from 10 to noon will have you circling back, not running in circles, to pull your experience forward in new ways. Advance your career, plus help others with theirs. Join us Saturdays, 10 to noon, right here on 104.1 The Truth, for pragmatic advice and unconventional wisdom. Circles of Change with Dr. Zara Larson, where your path is created by walking on it. Welcome again here on Circles of Change to our second hour. Thanks so much. Coming up, of course, is our Valentine's Day week. Thanks for joining us. Well, if anyone knows me well enough, they know the tagline for my business is unleashing potential so that people can do things that they don't even realize they're capable of. And so it's with great pleasure I've identified a partner in the change crime in that space, Tom Ennersby. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Zara. I'm so excited to be here.
It is just great. Let me give a brief introduction. Tom is CEO of Ennersby Heron Associates. It's a certified financial planning practice based in Minnesota, licensed to conduct business in 30 states. He's a business graduate of Minnesota State and former business executive and trainer from Ameriprise Financial. And Tom is over thus 25 years in the financial industry, in addition to having been an area sales manager for the Maytag company. He's a proud father of three children, and he and his wife, Lisa, enjoy getting away to the lakes of northern Wisconsin with them. And Tom is also active in the community as a board member of the area YMCA and also a youth basketball coach for almost 20 years. Well, what he's done is partnered with New Englanders John Wortman, a consultant to education, nonprofit, startup, and Fortune 100 companies, and Jay Therian, a leading and leadership development and learning development coach. And the three just released the new book, The Three Commitments of Leadership: How Clarity, Stability, and Rhythm Create Great Leaders. And I believe, actually, we're also going to hear a bit about creating great workers in the process, too. So, again, Tom, welcome to the show to talk about your newly released book.
Thanks again.
So tell me, how's it going so far?
You know, it's going great. It was such a fun time writing this book. You know, I know you've had this experience where it just keeps building as you start to discover certain truths. And as we've begun to share this message, now that the book is out, you know, McGraw-Hill published our book and have done a great job helping us promote it. As people begin to hear the message of this, they're nodding. And it's like speaking to a large room where everyone is nodding at you. They're recognizing that what we found in this book is really valid. I'm just really excited. So it's going great. Thanks for asking.
Well, you know, it isn't so much the destination, meaning getting the book now that you are out, getting the pleasure to talk to people, sign copies and so on, but it was the journey to get there. Tell me, what was it? Was it a major epiphany that helped, you know, kind of held the three of you together so fast and true to come up with this idea of commitments for leadership?
You know, John Wortman wrote a book, a great book, called Communicating at Work, Mastering Communications at Work, and John had interviewed me for his book. And as we began to work on his book, something started to form between us, this recognition that the potential that exists in people, the potential to be more than they are today and to make an impact that's bigger than the one they're making, became so evident. And as we talked about some of the techniques in his book and experiences that I had had, we started to recognize that there were so many consistent things that people can do, and that the idea of commitments was kept coming up. This idea that that when people make a commitment, something that they stand for, an unwavering promise, that they begin to draw from other people their best. And so we started to form around this idea that great leaders really commit to certain things and they stand for them. And when they do, their people start committing and taking a stand and stepping forward. And that's when organizations, groups, teams start to go to another level of performance that we're always surprised by when we actually get there. We go, wow, I can't believe we can
pull this off. Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, I think the other thing, though, Tom, is let's talk about the timing of your book. Quite honestly, what caught my attention and why we had the opportunity to pick up and have you hosted here on the show is I think we've slid into a place where far too many people are sitting back, waiting, blaming, oh, woe is me, entitlement, etc. And I think this is an absolute call for action.
Well, thanks for recognizing that. You know, we talk about the three commitments, and the first commitment is clarity, the second one is stability, and the third is rhythm. And I just want to make, if I can, just take a moment and say that this, and I think about Diane Turner on your prior call. Oh, my gosh, what a great interview.
Thank you.
This idea, oh, it's phenomenal. This
idea of alignment. Yes.
I use it every day, the word alignment. I use it all day long every day. And clarity is not far from it. It's this idea that when individuals have clarity, clarity about self, clarity about relationship, clarity about role, clarity about reward, clarity about incentive, they begin to find a stability, a calm, the willingness to trust, if you think about the things she was talking about, in a organization or a team, when we can help people find clarity, they will find a stability. Now, let me give you the other side. Mm-hmm. When people lack clarity, they will also seek stability. But that stability is the stability of mediocrity. It's the stability that comes from avoidance. This finding of a place where you can sit down and avoid rather than step up and move forward to embrace opportunity. So you're right on when you say we're at a time when people are avoiding, when they're not reaching their potential. And I believe it's because there's a lack of clarity, a cloud in their way that they push back from to try and gain perspective. And what they end up doing is sitting down.
But let's be real clear, though, that it isn't necessarily all of their doing, right? I mean, still, though, to have the courage, to one point, if there's a trusting, safe environment, to raise their hand and say, I don't understand, I don't have enough information, and maybe even some situations you're withholding information from my ability to step up.
Yeah, right on. And it's the idea that people are going to find this stable place, to seek clarity and seek some stability, happens in the negative sense in so many of our work environments and in our other relationships because leadership has lost its way. Leadership has slipped into the pace of life and has turned into this reactionary, managerial, dictatorial role because managers, which we hope would be leaders, are also challenged by the pace of life. I mean, their cell phone rings every 2 seconds too with a buzz. And as a result, they are burdened in our corporate environment with less resources and less clarity, a faster pace. And so we recognize that leaders are challenged, and organizations in our country have stopped developing leaders because it takes work. And what they've done is they've moved to reactionary, high-pressure tactics of trying to squeeze the most out of their people, which is not the right approach.
Well, the other challenge, you know, though, in truth and in point, though, to become a high-performance organization, since business has become, in many situations, so much more complex, it's called for a lot more data, which we then need to turn to knowledge for action. Things like metrics and management and leadership dashboards and so on. I don't think you're saying we should toss all those out and we really don't need them. But in absence of having, and I think your book says it so nicely, an obsession with the relationship with people, you can become a bit of a robot or an automatron and thinking that's really what leadership is about. And it's so far from that.
Right on. It's, again, this idea that leadership is relatively complex if you let it be. Most leadership models that are put out today to try and help people become better leaders are complicated themselves. They create this checklist of things we're all supposed to do in the heat of the moment, where our book attempts to help you recognize that if you commit to three things and stand for those three things in all of your work, you can use it as a filter to sort through some of that complexity, and it will give you a quick guide, and I love your comments about getting on the path, a quick guide to get on the path, and then you'll find yourself able to sort through that complexity very quickly. And we try and make it simpler, actually, by providing these commitments rather than a checklist.
So clarity and that element of stability, I think, of course, stability is all the more important when actually in this age that we're in, that thriving amidst chaos is the lay of the landscape, but trying to find the stability within that so you can balance is so important.
Yeah, stability is the launching pad. Mm-hmm. It's the place where people are willing to take risk from, where they can begin to innovate, where they actually begin to listen, or where they begin to seek out others instead of just pulling back into themselves. And great leaders commit to finding that stability for their people. And it doesn't always mean money. Many times it means stability in routine, stability in that I am consistent as a leader, or stability that comes with self-awareness, as Diane Turner was talking about.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, the third commitment, I don't think it's a word that's frequently quoted in this whole conversation of leadership, and that's this idea of rhythm. Explain that to us.
Rhythm is about cadence. Mm-hmm. It's about something that you can hook on to. If you think about listening to music, and all of a sudden your foot starts tapping, you start joining the music. If you think about dancing and you think about your partner and you think about finding that dance together, that rhythm, that connection, and all of a sudden you're experiencing something together that is at another level. In sports, they call it the zone,
right,
and in psychology, they call it flow. It's this idea of cadence, and if I can give one quick example, my favorite is when you see the peloton in the Tour de France, where these bikers are all riding together in this bicycle race. I always used to think it was for wind resistance. I didn't know. And then I came to understand from a friend that it's the cadence, it's the pedaling, the rhythm of their riding together, so that people in the peloton can ground together and come to a common pattern that then the superstars break out of. They go to another level, a faster pace. They never believed they could. And rhythm in organization is the idea that if we can create some consistency, some pattern, some language, some commonality, some culture that people can connect to, there will be a rhythm that lets them bring their head up. Versus looking down, they can look up and across and recognize opportunity and reach forward, break out. And that idea is the idea of creating rhythm or cadence in your organization.
Well put. The kind of work that the three of you have done then, obviously yourself running your own business and the whole financial area. Boy, if there's ever an area that leaders are challenged, it's in the financial services sector right now for sure. And your two other colleagues in the leadership development and organization and coaching. Do these three attributes, do you feel, kind of go in sync constantly in the type of experiences you've had, Tom, as a leader?
I have to say they do, and they don't always go in order. Mm-hmm. It's kind of interesting. I loved your story earlier about circling.
Yeah.
You know, circling doesn't mean spiraling downward. It
exactly.
means sometimes going backwards and moving forward and backward and pulling from your experiences to reflect and then move forward. And the same thing here, that we move around through these three commitments. And I have to say, from the people we're sharing this with, they're finding that it works in all settings. The one that's really surprising me is families.
Yeah.
Families are buying these books in bulk, and they're handing them out to their family, and they're saying, we are committed as a family to these things. And I'm thinking, really? And then when they start talking about it with me, it's starting to show as a truth.
Yeah,
and that's
yeah.
what's getting us so excited.
Well, I think in many, of course, we have the pleasure of having so many authors contribute here to Circles of Change, and so I always enjoy asking that question. Now, you're relatively newly published with your book, but I bet you know, we'll call you 6 months from now and reconnect, and you'll have some, you know, obtuse discussion to say, we had no idea this book would pull the three of us in this direction, or it would open up to these types of conversations. And you're right, this area of clarity, stability, and rhythm, I mean, any of us parents, and you're an experienced parent, think about when your kids were toddlers and they were having to deal with so much change in their body, their mental well-being, and so on. And if you couldn't provide them those three elements, stability, rhythm, patterns, etc., you know, there's reasons why kids end up in their terrible twos or teens get sidetracked with other things.
Right on. So we use the three commitments as a filter. Mm-hmm. I personally found myself in a situation lately where it was very complicated, a lot of pressure, and we literally went back to the three commitments and solved the problem in the group through the use of the three commitments as a filter to say, did we have clarity? Yeah. Is there stability? Is there a rhythm to the way we were working together? Or did we have personal rhythm in our efforts? And we found where the gaps were and were able together to solve that by using the three commitments in the common language. It really worked in my own life, and I'm seeing it every day.
You know, one of the premises that you started out with at the beginning of your book, Tom, is that you make the statement that leaders are not born, that it's a learned behavior. I'd like you to talk about that a little bit more, because that's often a conundrum that's thrown back and forth. Do you have it or don't you have it when it talks about truly who leaders are in organizations?
Yeah, well, I believe what you just said and what I've said in the book. And through that belief that leaders are not born, it inherently means that I believe everyone can lead.
Exactly.
And so I spend my energy finding that leader who is currently not stepping forward. I believe they're in there every day. My dad taught me that as a teacher and as a coach, that we seek it out every day. So the idea is that if you will begin with the three commitments as a leader, that what will happen is your people, and you'll use the words consciously, you'll express them, that I'm seeking clarity. And you notice I say the word seeking.
Seeking.
Clarity is not given, it is found. So I am seeking clarity. If you'll use those words, your people will use those words. They'll use them back to you. And when that happens, they become their words, and the three commitments become their way. And you'll soon be able to step back and say, you should see yourself as a leader right now, Susan or Zara or David. You should see yourself as a leader. I can see you leading with the three commitments. And if you don't mind, I think you're the leader in this situation. I'd like to hear and watch your leadership. Would that be okay with you? And they step forward. And the idea here, as a country, as a world, if we can let these people step forward, the greatest resource in the world is the potential of our people. It is not the knowledge we possess today. It's the knowledge that is held by other people, not heard.
Yeah, absolutely. And particularly for those of us that have had the pleasure of working in manufacturing organizations, that the best knowledge comes from right down on the factory floor or right deep in your supply chain or out there in the field working on the service issues that allow that to bubble up.
Yeah. So I actually allow customers to lead us from time to time. We believe that all can lead in a team, and that in a relationship there are many sides, and in that those sides all can lead. And if you're committed to that and committed to the belief that all people have leadership within them, and that they're not born, they are found or created, then all people will have a chance to lead, and now we multiply our potential rather than stifle it through a system of top-down management.
Mm-hmm. But you would say, though, in certain elements, it's still part of the role of leading, of course, is also coaching and enabling others. And sometimes that does take special skill or other experiences that kind of can compound on one another.
The idea, I think what I hear you saying here is the idea that there are times where we as leaders need to be directed.
You betcha. Or we need to patch on or shoulder up with someone else who can not just play to our strengths, but help us perhaps in the areas we might be limited.
Yes, and this idea that we need to be directive, we need to have collaborative shared roles is absolutely important. But in that understanding, if that's where we stop, which is where many people go to because it's under our control.
Right, right.
We stop because it's under our control, and we then don't seek out because we feel this loss of control. What you'll find is if you give other people the opportunity to express, they will give you the power. Versus trying to retain the power, you're already losing it.
Mm-hmm. No doubt about it. I find it interesting, again, Tom, your background, having come through the being part of the financial services industry, you're having been a trainer and an educator in there, coupling that with your two colleagues, one more traditional and educational nonprofit, as well as the other in learning and development. Share a little bit about the chemistry between the three of you.
Thank you for asking that. First of all, John Wortman. John Wortman is a Harvard-educated gentleman who works in the nonprofit world and has a very broad range, including a divinity degree, mm-hmm. if you can imagine.
Oh, absolutely. I could see that.
Yeah, I bet you can. He's an amazing man, and I'm so honored to have worked with him. Jay Therrien is an educational development person who played in a rock band that traveled nationally.
Right.
So he brings this learning thing that came from playing music. And what we found between us is we weren't all the same, mm-hmm. but we were all fired up about the same belief, the belief that the talent that lies within people is the greatest opportunity in the world. It is the greatest resource in America and in the world. And we came to it from different angles and different skill sets to assemble this book. So the collaborative was one where we had to spend time understanding each other, seeking clarity of each other, mm-hmm. Finding a stability within ourselves, and then allowing a rhythm to be developed between us. And we grooved, as Jay would say.
We grooved. Well, it'll be fun to see the opportunity of the three of you together on a panel talking about your new book. Do you see an opportunity like that coming here shortly?
We have many speaking events going around. They tend to be in large private environments at the moment. We're probably going to head out into the university tours. We're getting a lot of interest there from youth that are interested in this idea. And then I think there'll be many of these kind of opportunities. I hope that someday I could be back on this show with my partners. I have to tell you, I've been listening to your work. You're the best I've heard, and I've done
many... Oh, my goodness. Thank you so much.
No, I mean that. I've done many, many interviews. You're the best I've heard.
Well, great.
I'm going to start listening. I'm a new groupie.
Yeah, new groupie. I love it. You're on.
Right.
My board operator just gave us a thumbs up. Well, your intention or your desired outcome for the book, Tom, when the three of you said and did this, it obviously welled up from your common intersections of experiences. Do you see this taking you on a path to write additional books? I mean, any idea of now that the child's been born, how you're going to raise the child or how it's going to raise you?
Well, I'm consulting in the C-suites, the executive suites of major corporations around the country. Right now, it's manifesting itself there. We're beginning to see a demand for training materials that we're beginning to develop. And I think other books are inevitable. I think they're coming. And a business, frankly, is forming out of this that we weren't quite sure we were committed to. We just didn't know. So the momentum is carrying us, and we're increasing our clarity about the opportunity. And I would expect to see a lot come.
And, you know, I think that's an important message to leave with our listeners, is that sometimes we you know, do things mindfully, saying this is a desired outcome. But many times some of our greatest work comes from the tangential things that are riding right to the side with us. And the same would say, you know, I'm sure when you talk about clarity, leadership, and rhythm as we lead others, is to always be prepared for the unexpected, because that's usually where the greatest opportunity lies.
Yes, I would agree.
The process of writing the book then, and now the collaboration, and as it's unfolding further for you, a number of the examples that you cite in the book and the wisdom you got from other leaders, certain people you interviewed in the course of this that were so striking to you?
You know, history. Yeah, what we relied upon. I'll be honest with you, and the greatest one in of all of them for me was Harriet Tubman. We studied Harriet Tubman. How do you take people with so much fear and help them to create a rhythm that they can hook onto, to have clarity of process and a stability, a sense of confidence to take the leap, to leave slavery, and or to take the risk as a free person to help people who needed to leave slavery? To think about that challenge, she practiced the things we talk about. We refer to her in the book, along with Einstein and Goddard and Greek gods and all kinds of other things. We really encourage you to read the stories of history. It's helped us to confirm the validity of the three commitments.
Very good. Well, Tom Endersby, thank you so very much for joining us. Our book, again, is The Opportunity, The Three Commitments of Leadership, How Clarity, Stability, and Rhythm Create Great Leaders. And rest assured, you will be a repeat guest on Circles of Change. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Sarah.
You bet. Take care. Change is chaotic. That is, unless you embrace it, going places you hadn't dreamed were possible. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, is a leadership consulting, executive coaching, and career transition firm. We help individuals make the most of their current employment situation or to step forward confidently into a career transition. Contact us at thelarsengroup.com or toll free 1-877-544-2580. The Larson Group, Architects of Change, helping others unleash potential through transformational change. 1-877-544-2580.